attacking Chicago teachers, as you know.
Okay, well, I'm sorry to cut you off, Young, but we are running out of time. I'd just like to give you both an opportunity to give our listeners any contact information or ways that they can get in touch with you or the struggles that you're involved with to be in, you know, keep either get involved or learn more. Are there websites or Facebook pages?
We do have a Facebook page. If you would just search for Reynolds Community Social Justice, you would find it. Yeah, and if you want to email me, it's stevensiegel333@yahoo.com.
And for the Portland Teachers website, I think it's portlandteachers.org. And if you look through the committees, you will find the Social Justice Committee.
All right. Thank you, Young Nam of the Portland Association of Teachers Social Justice Committee, and Stephen Siegel, Reynolds Education Association Social Justice Caucus. This has been Labor Radio. I'm Jamie Partridge, my co-host Amanda Hill, and our engineer Danielle Parks. Thanks, Danielle. And tune in next Monday and every Monday for Labor Radio.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Outside the Frame film screening, The Lost Boys of Portlandia. This screening takes place Wednesday, March 1st at 7 p.m. at Hurava Shalom, Portland. The Lost Boys of Portlandia is a film where homeless youth in Portland, Oregon debate if and how to return to mainstream society while creating their own film version of the iconic story of Peter Pan. There will also be a panel discussion with youth who have experienced homelessness after the film. Again, that's The Lost Boys of Portlandia, Wednesday, March 1st at 7 p.m. at Havra Shalom, 825 Southwest 18th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Good evening. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. My guest is Shannon White, Deputy Director for Partnership for Safety and Justice. PSJ is an organization that advances policy solutions to crime that ensures justice, equity, accountability, and healing to achieve safe, strong Oregon communities. Hi, Shannon. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
The Oregon Legislature is in session, and Partnership for Safety and Justice will hold its lobby day. Shannon, talk about PSJ's lobby day.
So every legislative session, Partnership for Safety and Justice holds a day when people from the community can come down and speak to their own legislators about the issues that we're working on. So this year, that will be April 3rd. It's an all-day event, so it does mean people have to take the day off work if you work on Mondays. And we spend the morning bringing in guest speakers, training people on the issues that we'll be addressing, and then we schedule meetings for everyone who comes to meet with their legislators and have conversations. It's an opportunity both to speak to the agenda that PSJ is putting forward, but also bring your personal perspective to it, to your legislator. As a constituent to your elected official, your voice makes a huge difference in what gets passed down in Salem.
Oregon is currently facing a budget crisis. How does this affect the prison system?
Well, there are a lot of impacts. The one we are most focused on is the fact that, as you're alluding to, Oregon is facing a $1.8 billion budget deficit, which is going to mean cuts for programs and services across the state. At the same time, Oregon is still on the brink of having to open a second prison for women at a cost of nearly $20 million. That's a huge cost, especially for a population, 70% of whom are convicted of drug and property crimes. And we know that long prison sentences are not the right answer for that population. So we'll be working throughout session to reduce some prison sentences, create some savings, and allow for more investment in the kinds of accountability and treatment and services that we know work for women like the ones currently headed to prison.
Now, Shannon, the Oregon Department of Corrections recently requested funding for a second prison for women, and the Oregon Legislature's Emergency Board in December 2016 denied that request for funding. So are you saying that in this legislative session, this issue is alive and well?
Yes, the E-Board made that decision based on some efforts by a few counties around the state to create some alternatives to prison for some women. They've been working on some work release programs in a handful of counties to help decrease the population, but it's not decreased enough that we won't continue to be having to ask this question of, do we need to open the second prison? It took it down enough to get us out of this crisis mode before we could get into a legislative session where we have to fight for some longer term solutions to the population growth in the female prisons.
So Shannon, what other issues will we be discussing with our legislators on April 3rd?
So this session, we have one package of reforms that includes several different reforms. I think it's probably worth backing up a little bit to say back in 2013, we helped to pass a bill called House Bill 3194, the Justice Reinvestment Act, that was some minor sentencing reforms and with that kept us from having to open or build new prisons. And that some of that money was able to be reinvested into counties to do accountability more locally and to fund things like addiction treatment, mental health treatment, transition housing, and things like that. Those reforms, we always said, even back then, did not go deep enough to really prevent us from having to have this conversation about prisons. And we are back in that position. So because of that, we've passed what you might say is Justice Reinvestment Part 2. And this session, we will be looking at three different sentencing reforms. The first one being around repeat drug and property crime offenses. This is the disproportionate driver of the female population, but also has a very significant impact on the male prison population. And we need to realign those sentences to be more in line with what we know works best for people who are struggling with addiction in particular.
Shannon, are you referring to Measure 57?
Yes. So Measure 57 was passed in 2008 in Oregon. It was a legislative alternative to a Kevin Mannix measure, Measure 61. Neither were great options. The lesser of two evils passed, and we have seen its disproportionate impact on the prison population. It also did invest in treatment, and that was one of the upsides of that bill. But it claimed to be targeting sort of these super predators in the drug and property world, and yet it's just largely picking up people who are struggling with addiction. So yes, they have repeat offenses, but you know, as everyone who knows anyone who's been an addict, there's not a straight line between addiction and sobriety, and we don't think sending people to prison repeatedly is the most effective way of addressing that population.
And Measure 57, of course, is the mandatory minimum sentencing law that deals with drug and property crimes and has a mandatory sentence of how many years, Shannon?
It's a range depending on the different crimes, but it increased sentencing for drug and property crimes across the board. You know, one thing to understand about the time that when Measure 57 passed was this, a year after Texas started significant criminal justice reforms and started closing prisons. So while Measure 11, who listeners are probably familiar with, passed in 1994 when all the states were passing tough on crime measures, 2008, we were way out of sync with mandatory sentencing laws. Everyone knew at that point, even Texas, that drug and property crimes are not the kind of crimes we should have driving our prison population. So it was out of sync. We've worked to address it over the years. Now is time to have that conversation more deeply with the legislature.
Multnomah County is about to roll out their LEAD program to help divert people with addiction from prison. I know it's just Multnomah County, but how does that impact this issue?
Well, I think if we weren't in the crisis we're in about having to build a second prison for women, we would love to be advocating for more counties to do what Multnomah County is doing and investing in the law enforcement assisted diversion program, which is a pre-booking, so before you even get booked into the jail program, that diverts people from the system entirely and really has them sort of monitored through intensive case management, but not through probation, not through law enforcement, although law enforcement stays at the table to see how the person's progressing, but the charges are dismissed. I think that is the cutting edge of public safety policy in the country. It's a model program started in Seattle, and it's the kind of thing we should be thinking more about, because even police officers know that arresting people for the 37th time isn't getting the outcome we hoped it would. So rather than continuing to do something we know doesn't work, we need to at least have a bunch of tools in our toolbox. And when you talk to law enforcement officers in Seattle, that's what they say. Of course, they still lock people up, but they love having different tools in their toolbox and not just one tool to address addiction-driven crime. Oregon's Criminal Justice Commission is hosting a Justice Reinvestment Summit, and one of the programs that will be highlighted is the LEAD, or Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion Program, and people from the program will be coming down and speaking about its benefits to people from all 36 counties who have signed up to attend this. So we are hopeful that this new approach, this cutting-edge approach to addressing addiction, will take hold even further in Oregon.
Shannon, you mentioned House Bill 3194, the Justice Reinvestment Package that was passed by Oregon legislators in 2013. Now, that did include some sentencing changes that had an impact on prison beds, and it did decrease prison growth. And short-term transition leave represented the bulk of the decrease in prison beds. And transition leave is another issue we'll be discussing with our legislators on Lobby Day on April 3rd.
Yeah, that's another part of our Justice Reinvestment Part 2 package, is expanding transition leave. Short-term transition leave, as it's called, was the most successful sentencing reform from the 2013 legislation. It led to the greatest decrease in our prison population, where other reforms were less successful in their implementation. This time we'll be looking to expand on that, to expand it from its current 90-day transition release to up to 180 days. Now, short-term transition leave, what that is a period of intensive supervision for someone coming out of prison, where they have increased resources available to them around employment support, housing support, getting connected with addiction treatment, so that we have a more supported transition into the community, which so far the early results show is getting the better public safety outcomes that we would expect.
And as everyone is aware, it's very difficult to walk out of prison and get housing, employment, and take care of everything necessary to be successful.
That's exactly right. To get away from the model, the stories probably people have heard where people get dropped off in a parking lot, given $10, and they say, I have nowhere to sleep tonight. And they say, well, maybe you should sleep in the parking lot of your probation office. That's not the kind of transition we want for anyone. We know that the federal government does a 6 to 12 month transition leave, so we're not out of sync in thinking about longer supported transition leave. We will be looking to expand it either to 120, 150, or 180. And if we're successful in passing our short-term transition leave policy reform, it won't impact people currently in prison, but instead people who are charged after the bill is passed.
We talked about the possibility of the legislature revisiting the issue of a second woman's prison during this legislative session. Another issue that affects women is the family sentencing alternative, which Oregon legislators passed during the 2015 legislative session. And this is another issue that PSJ will address on Lobby Day. Talk about the family sentencing alternative and how it's helping keep families together.
So the family sentencing alternative is modeled after, again, a program in Washington State that prioritizes parents who have custody of their children for diversion from prison through intensive support and services. We passed that with the help of Representative Jennifer Williamson last session, in part to address the women's prison population. The implementation of that bill has not been as successful as we had hoped, so this session we'll be going back and tweaking some of the ways the bill was written to allow greater access to the program. Right now, there's some exclusions based on prior criminal history that are really keeping particularly women who would otherwise be eligible and should be eligible out of the program. One of the things we know about families is that they're often the greatest motivation for people to put their lives back on track. You know, most people in the male and female prison population are struggling with addiction. And in the long term, we hope this will be more of a public health issue than a criminal justice issue. But for now, we have to do the things that ensure folks are most likely to put their lives on the path that's going to make them most successful. And children are a huge motivator in that. And the more we can keep parents safely connected to their children while they are getting their lives on track, the better it is both for the children and for the adults. As we know, children who whose parents go to jail can disproportionately end up in other parts of the system, particularly foster care, which we know is a broken and not wonderful and safe place for children.
Mm-hmm. And I want to add that there are strict criteria around who serves their time in the community to remain connected to their children instead of going to prison.
Yeah, and this program in particular really looks not just at sort of traditional services that people might get, like the addiction treatment, mental health treatment, but also works on giving folks tools to have a strong family. So that gets integrated in through a partnership with Department of Human Services. So probation officers are being trained in how to do visits for families, not just to do a standard probation visit. How to talk about things that can be beneficial to families, whether it's eating dinner together or reading books together and trying to really strengthen the family bond and healthy relationships within that family. So our hope this session is to pass these sentencing reforms that will drive down our prison population in ways that achieve savings, especially during this budget crisis. So realigning our drug and property crimes so we can invest in things like treatment and housing, fixing the family sentencing alternative so it has a greater number of parents eligible for the program, and expanding short-term transition leave. That should create millions of dollars in savings, and our bill will require that those savings get reinvested back into both community-based victim services and also into the Justice Reinvestment Fund so we can continue to support the programs that are helping to divert people safely from prison in their communities. So we are going to be helping families stay together. We are going to be advocating for people with children. We're going to be protecting programs that support crime survivors while reducing excessive prison sentences for drug and property crimes. That is the focus of our work in 2017.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. My guest is Shannon White with Partnership for Safety and Justice, and we are discussing PSJ's Lobby Day on April 3rd. Shannon, PSJ's holistic approach includes victims of crime. And again, this is on PSJ's Lobby Day agenda. What is the state of victim services here in Oregon?
Victim services in this state are dramatically underfunded. There is one source of general fund dollars for victim services, for domestic and sexual violence services, called the Oregon Domestic and Sexual Violence Services Fund. It's funded at about 50% of emergency level services. So that means someone is calling for help to get herself and her children out of a violent situation and is being told, look, we don't have a bed, but you know what? Sleeping under this bridge is safer than that bridge, so maybe you can go there, or maybe you can ride the MAX all night. Or in rural communities, that might look like, we do have a shelter bed, but it's 150 miles from where you are, and we don't have anyone who can come out and get you here. This has been a priority for PSJ for many, many years to increase funding for victim services. And I think it's also really important to remember that many times, certainly not always, but often people who were victimized in life also can end up in the criminal justice system, right? And so there's a lot of intersection between the harm that is done to people and harm that gets committed. And so part of what we want to do is help people get the services and support for trauma and violence that they experience initially to create healing before things get worse.
And again, children, foster care system, and everything else that goes along with victims and crime.
Absolutely. And it's also important to remember that our criminal justice system disproportionately targets Black, Latino, and Native American people. So the harm that those communities are experiencing gets criminalized more than it does in white communities. And that's not the most appropriate response, right? And we need to address that disparity that is tearing apart families and destroying economic stability, particularly in communities of color. Well, our package bill, as I said, includes the sentencing reforms, investment in victim services and justice reinvestment. We'll also be individually prioritizing both of those budget items separately. So the Oregon Domestic and Sexual Violence Fund and justice reinvestment funding. Those, like everything in the state, is facing a budget cut. And these are core, core public safety services that if they get cut will undoubtedly lead to the unintended consequences probably of more people going to prison and less healing happening for victims. So we will both be advocating for these sentencing reforms, but also very much pushing strongly for investments into these public safety services that we know have to be maintained.
So Shannon, I have participated in a number of PSJ's lobby days down in Salem. And PSJ makes it very easy for us to speak with our legislators about criminal justice and prison issues for someone that may be considering attending Lobby Day on April 3rd. Describe what happens at PSJ Lobby Day in Salem.
Well, before we get to Lobby Day, you would sign up through our website and through people in our office, and we would take care of scheduling you to meet with your individual legislator. But you won't be doing that alone. We make sure that you go with a team. There's always a team captain who has done this several times before. It could be Karen here from KBOO that will help make sure that the visit goes smoothly. We conduct trainings in the morning so everyone gets trained on the issues we'll be talking about. And you also get a package of information so you have talking points. You have time to sit with your team and develop your talking points so you're ready to bring your story and your perspective to the issues that we'll be talking about. So, for example, I talked to a young woman at a meeting the other day who said her mother had been addicted and in and out of the prison system. So she might work on a statement that would say, this was my experience with my mom, this is why it didn't work for me, and that's why I want to support this legislative agenda that changes our approach to drug and property crimes in Oregon.
And we're visited by some of the state legislators who support prison reform.
Yeah, so we have guest speakers come in. They often have a busy schedule, but we let our champions know that we're in the room and ask them to come speak to us when they can about how happy they are to have us there. And they always drop in, whether we invite them or not, because they're excited to hear from their constituents. You know, that you are the voter in their district, and hearing your voice, seeing that people are showing up from around the state has an impact and makes a difference. I also say we provide food and drinks, so you don't have to pack a lunch. You just have to get to Salem and park, and we will do the rest.
And Shannon, why is it important to have a one-on-one conversation with your state legislator?
You know, these legislators get bombarded with bills on a range of issues, and what really sticks in their mind is the stories. Why it matters to you that we do public safety differently, a voter in their district, is the thing that will stick in their head way more than you know, me going in there with a legislative agenda all typed up and pretty and telling them why we need to do this. The stories from people in their district is the kind of thing that will stick in their mind. They'll remember when they're on the House floor or the Senate floor taking a vote. They need to remember the real impacts and why there's community concern about these issues.
So I hope our listeners are ready to go down to Salem on April 3rd, PSJ's Lobby Day. Shannon, how do they sign up?
To join us for Lobby Day, you can go to our website and either email us directly or join up on the Take Action button, and you will be added to our emailing list to receive more information about our April 3rd Lobby Day. Our website is safetyandjustice.org.
Shannon, you talked about Oregon's mandatory minimum sentencing laws that people have to serve day for day, no time off for good behavior. They're very long sentences. Measure 11, for instance, minimum sentencing is 70 months. And you talked about Measure 57 and how it was passed here in Oregon while other states were recognizing the negative impacts of mandatory minimum sentencing laws. Talk more about Oregon's excessive sentencing and just how devastating they are, especially to our youth and families and communities.
I think it's really worth noting that Measure 57, these drug and property crime laws, is really disproportionately affecting the female population. We've seen a 22% rise in the female population in the last 7 or 8 years, as opposed to the male population that's been about 2%. And we look at what it's for drug and property crime sentencing. And, you know, it's, you can never say definitively why, but do we have more people that are addicted and therefore engaging in these kinds of crimes, or is it because of the response we've chosen, the way we are responding to those crimes? Have we chosen to invest more in incarceration and less in the other things people need to be successful? And we do see a dramatic impact and disproportionate impact on the female population and also on communities of color. There's been a lot of attention. I think it's much better known now than it had been before by the public in general around the impacts of the criminal justice system on the Black community, but the Latino community as well, and actually dramatic impact and disproportionate impact for the Native American community. And we have not had enough conversation about that, but particularly when you look at the impact by race of these laws, the Native American community is one that's really being impacted. And it's really important to remember, this isn't just about a prison sentence, whether you agree with a prison sentence or not. It is about taking potentially a breadwinner out of the home, taking a parent away from children who then go into foster care. These are very significant and devastating impacts to communities that are being disproportionately targeted, and we need to remember that when we think about and have debates about sentencing policy. Is this just a sentencing policy, or is this actually a policy that is tearing apart families and destroying the economic foundations of communities?
And as you said, instead of looking at these mandatory minimum sentencing laws, Measure 57, Measure 11, we're instead considering opening a second woman's prison.
That's right. And I think that's just such an indicator of how we've spun off in the wrong direction. You know, Texas has managed to close prisons over the last several years, and we're about to open a new one. We've had to expand to a larger unit for men over the last year. And so we are not on the right track. There is an opportunity to continue to drive the prison population down. We all know that people are being disproportionately brought into the system along the lines of race, as we've talked about, but also because of mental health and addiction. So that the correction system becomes one of the biggest mental health providers in the state is an abomination. We know that's the wrong place. We know that our police aren't equipped to safely work with mentally ill people. We need different systems for helping people who need support during times of crisis, whether it's a mental health crisis or an addiction crisis, and one that understands that the pathway to stability is not a straight one. It's all of us who have family members, who friends who struggle with mental health or addiction, or both, often know that it is a bumpy, bumpy road. And we can have these zero tolerance policies around that are ineffective and costly, or we can try and do things in a smarter, more effective way.
Shannon White, Deputy Director of Partnership for Safety and Justice. I will see you in Salem on PSJ's Lobby Day, April 3rd. Thank you so much, Shannon.
Karen, thank you for having me.
You have been listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/Prison Pipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Thank you to our engineers, Danielle and Mike. Good night.
Old pirates, yes, they rob I. Sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit. But my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipation.
emancipate yourself from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop at the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs. From mental slavery, none but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop at the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Some say it's just a part of it.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214, unless otherwise noted. The Community Advisory Board meeting will take place Tuesday, February 28th at 5 p.m.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Oregon Action Plan, Immigration Rights.